Thank you, Gail. Okay, this mimer is from the Sfas Emes, and we have done the Sfas Emes before, but just a quick review of the history there. The first Ger Rebbe was a Chidushei Horim, Rav Yitzchak Meir, and his grandson, the Sfas Emes, was the next Ger Rebbe. That's who we're learning from. The Sfas Emes died in 1904, 1905. The Rebbe after him was the Imre Emes. And the Imre Emes was able to escape the Holocaust in a miraculous way with just a few of his family. Mostly everybody was killed in the Holocaust. And he made his way to Eretz Yisrael. The Imre Emes was also the very great man who, in Europe, together with the Chafetz Chaim, founded the Agudas Yisrael organization. Then, after the Imre Emes died, the next three rebbes were his three sons, who had also survived the Holocaust consecutively. Right after the Imre Emes was his son, the Beis Yisroel. After him was the Lev Simcha, and then the Pnei Menachem. Those were three brothers. And the current Ger Rebbe is Rav Yaakov, Ger Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the lineage of the Ger Chasidus, which was rebuilt also after the Holocaust, and now numbers, I'm sure, probably 20, 30,000 people, Kinnanhor. And the Sfas Emes was a towering figure, both of Torah and Chasidus, one of the great leaders of the Jewish people in Eastern Europe and Poland, and was really looked to as one of the greatest men of his time. So we're going to take a look at a mimer from the Sfas Emes, and it combines two things. One is that during this semester we've been focusing on Torah and Kabbalah Satorah. And even though Shavuos is now a little bit of a ways behind us, but there's still the concept of Torah we were going to focus on. And in addition, it combines it with a few very penetrating insights on Parshas Korach, which is, of course, the Parshas HaShavua. So it's on page 122. It's the left side of the page at the very top. The Parshas Korach. Chazal Dorshu Olav. So the Chachamim darshaned regarding Korach. Boteach be'ashro, etc. Yipol. One who puts his faith or his trust in his wealth, ultimately he will fall. Korach was a very, very wealthy person. Dichsiv resh va'osher altitein li, hatrifeni lechem chuki. Now, I think that means, I didn't get a chance to look up that pasuk, resh usually means poverty, like a rush is a poor person. So I think it means poverty and wealth do not give me. Just provide me, hatrifeni, lechem chuki, with my fixed bread, my fixed portion of food. So David HaMelech is saying there that it's not that he wants to be poor, and it's not that he wants to be rich, but Hashem, just please provide me with my bread, my basic needs that I need in life. I think that's the pshat of the pasuk. Hatrifeni lechem chuki, the last three words. Ube'emes amru chazal. The Chachamim said, Ein ani ela min ha-Torah u-mitzvos. What is the true meaning of an ani, a poor person? It's a person who has no Torah and no mitzvos. That's what it means to be poor. So a person can have money, but if they don't have Torah and mitzvos, they're poor, right? They're bereft of those most important things in life. Mashma, so being that the Chachamim said that on this side of the equation, that poverty means to be poor of Torah and mitzvos, so she'osher, we could infer that wealth, hu gam kein b'Torah. That's just the other side of it. A person who's wealthy is one who has Torah and who has mitzvos. Kamosha Kasuv, Shepikeach gadol hoyu Korach. Indeed, the Chachamim say that Korach was a pikeach, and a pikeach means a very smart and intelligent person. The Chacham b'Torah, and he was also learned in Torah. So, of course, the great question here, which is implied and which many of the Mefarshim ask, is, so what happened to Korach? Right? He was a Talmud Chacham, a big Talmud Chacham. He was from a prestigious family, from the family of Kohath. He had great relatives. He had wealth. So what went wrong? What happened with Korach? So many different points of view on this. One, I'll just mention that even though he does not say it right here, but an important thought, I believe, the Torah begins it with Vayikach Korach. Korach took. So with that one word, the Torah is really giving us insight into what Korach was about, that he was taking. It was really about himself. So even though he had wealth and he had Torah and he had prestige, but it was really self-centered. Vayikach Korach says it all. He was out to grab something, to take something that was not rightfully his. So that's one way to answer that question, or at least to approach it. Now the Sfas says the following machshava, and really it applies to all of us, as always. Avol be'emes, but in truth, hechachma tzricha lahavi ha'adam lidei ma'asa. Wisdom, true wisdom, Torah wisdom, is meant to bring a person to action, to do something. But it's not simply intellectual wisdom and knowledge and interesting things, but we are supposed to put it into our behavior, into our life, change, grow, ma'aseh, put it into the realm of action. And the Ramchal teaches in the Derech Hashem that one of the premises for learning Torah in the true sense is a person who's committed to tikkun ha-ma'aseh b'chol eis. That's what the Ramchal says. Constantly improving our behavior. If there's no Torah without that premise, then what is the Torah for? So tikkun ha-ma'aseh b'chol eis. So here too, he says it, this Sfas Emes, it has to come lidei ma'aseh. Valzeh kisiv. And about this it is written. Now he goes back to the pasuk which he quoted. Hatrifeni lechem chuki. Please Hashem, provide me with my fixed portion of bread, of lechem. Ve'ein lechem ela Torah. One of the drashos of Chazal, lechem is Torah. Now we often find Torah is compared to lots of things. Ein mayim ela Torah, it's water. Shemen is zayis, is chachmas haTorah. So here, lechem is Torah. All different types of metaphors, each one is bringing out a different facet of Torah. They're all true, but they're trying to bring out a certain dimension of Torah in this metaphor, comparing it to food, and in this case, lechem. So when David HaMelech says, please provide me with lechem chuki, my quotion, my portion of Torah, of bread, it means of Torah. Please give me, Hashem, my portion of Torah. Lechem is Torah. Sheyazmin Hashem yisporach lo'adam divrei Torah. That God will give over to us, literally designate for us, words of Torah. Now here's the key part. Sheya'asu bo roshem. And that the Torah will make an impression upon us. It will have an impact upon us. V'yikachiyus umazon. So that we will take life and sustenance, mehadavorim, from these words of Torah. Shezeh tachlis haTorah, because this is really the ultimate objective of Torah, is to receive life from it and sustenance. So David HaMelech is saying to Hashem, please give me my daily portion of bread, which is Torah. And just like bread, that which a person eats becomes a part of them. He's asking, please allow the Torah to become a part of me. So that's the metaphor to lechem. That what we eat becomes part of our body, becomes part of our blood system, so becomes part of who we are. So that's what David HaMelech is requesting here, and that's the specific meaning of lechem as Torah. Please, Hashem, let it come into me so that it becomes me. It makes a roshem. It's my very life. So a person eats food, we know that we're living on the energy based from that on that food. If we stop eating, chas v'shalom, a person will die. So we're taking it in, it's giving us life. And David HaMelech is saying, please, Hashem, let me take this Torah in so it becomes a part of me and it gives me life. It's not just an intellectual experience or another insight, but it's what my whole life is. And it will change me. Umehai taima. We're about 8-9 lines into the mimer on the top left of the page. Umehai taima nikres haTorah lechem. And that's why the Torah is referred to as lechem, as bread. Shenosein mazon v'kiyum el ha'adam. Because it gives sustenance and enduring qualities, kiyum el ha'adam, to a person. So reflecting back now on Korach, and he said at the beginning, Korach had Torah, Korach had wealth. So according to this Faisemis, what did he not have? Where did he go wrong? He wasn't internalizing his Torah. Wasn't internalizing. It wasn't becoming a part of his person. So he had great knowledge, but not to the extent that it really impacted him as a Jew. And that's what he's missing. Now he says a nice remez. V'zeh ramzu b'mishnah. It says in Pirkei Avos, im ein kemach ein Torah. If there's no flour, there's no Torah. Of course, the pshat of that means that you have to have food, or you can't eat, you can't learn. You don't have what to eat, you know, you can't learn Torah. That's a pshat, ein kemach ein Torah. But he's saying it differently. He's saying it like this, pirish shetachlis haTorah, that the objective of Torah is lehotzi mimena kemach umazan, to bring out of it, to produce from it, flour and bread, food. So im ein kemach, if I have not produced food, spiritual food, from my Torah, ein Torah. It's not Torah. That's a beautiful pshat. Right? I'll say it again. Im ein kemach, if I have not produced from the Torah that I've learned food, sustenance, to become a part of me, of my person, that it impacts me, who I am, what I do, what I think, that it really becomes a part of me. There's no kemach, I'm not internalizing it, ein Torah. It's not Torah that I'm studying. And that's really very consistent with that Ramchal, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, that the Ramchal says one of the preconditions of studying Torah is tikkun hamasa b'chol eis, that a person has to be committed to change as a result of the Torah that we learn. How do you change? By internalizing something, not just through an intellectual experience. All right, so that's the first part, and that, of course, is an insight, according to the Sfasem, as to what Korach was lacking. And it's also a tremendously important insight for us that when we study Torah, that we really endeavor to make it a part of who we are and not just an experience, you know, of study or thought or chas v'shalom, just a subject, but we take it into our life, into our very being. Okay, this is a good juncture if anybody has any questions or comments that they like to make. Yeah, Gil, please.
Mm-hmm. Question. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's Hatrifeni Lechem Chuki is a pasuk in Tehillim, but I don't know where it is in Tehillim.
Okay.
From David HaMelech. Yeah, please, Regina.
I think the greatest people who were able to turn Jews off in Derech were the people who had a real knowledge of Torah, a lot of them.
So sure.
They sort of knew the buttons
Right, they had not internalized it, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It's very true. Those are dangerous people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, my husband's grandfather came over from Minsk, from Yeshiva, and he did not even teach his children the Aleph Beis, but he would sometimes sit and learn Gemara, because it was an intellectual activity for him that he enjoyed, but it wasn't the purpose of becoming a better Jew.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I have heard from people who knew that in Europe there were people who used to write Sifrei Torah on Shabbos while they were smoking. Yeah, so you had this separation. You know, that, you know, we picture things in a certain way, and of course there was a lot of tremendous and great Torah in Europe, but there was also some serious problems at that time, and we had this kind of separate personality, and they valued the intellectual, achievement of Torah, and lived in communities which, of course, were, there was a lot of Yiddishkeit, but they had separated themselves from the actual mitzvahs part. Yeah. Dory, please. Yeah. He was not a Navi, but he had Ruach HaKodesh.
If somebody like Korach wasn't internalized
as Korach,
I think it's just...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Everything, he had all the brachos, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's just such a tremendous and important insight, you know, into how we always have to have our eyes on what it means to be true to Hashem, no matter what level a person's on. Yeah. So it's a question that we, I think, always have to be asking ourselves and re-asking ourselves, and to also make sure that we have a relationship with leaders. So what Korach did is he tried to overthrow the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he was so convinced of his own rectitude that he couldn't anymore listen to another person, a great person. So I think that we have to check ourselves out, you know, with people who have wisdom and who we trust their insight, and have those conversations and make sure where our eyes are not closed to the errors that we are making. Just want to make one comment on what Dori said, because on the next page of this Vasemes, a few pages later, I was just looking at it this morning, and he says the following thing from the Chozeh of Lublin. So the Chozeh says, Lahochiach mikan, that we can demonstrate from here, from Korach, ki gam ruach hakodesh yochol lahazik la'adam, that even ruach hakodesh can harm a person, says the Chozeh of Lublin. Unbelievable. She'eno shomer atzmo kara'uy, if he does not guard himself properly. So when you're given that extra vision and that extra insight, it's not like, okay, we're home, we made it. I have to watch myself with that insight and what I do with it and how do I apply it. Even at the Ruach HaKodesh level, which means this is a person who already has worked on themselves to become a Ba'al Ruach HaKodesh. That doesn't come out of nowhere. Even there, with that new level of insight, if we're not careful, then a Korach comes out. Big Musra lesson. Yeah, please, finally.
How was Korach able to influence so many people?
In this way, he was prestigious, come from a great family. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was wealthy. You know, so he had a lot of ability to persuade. And the Torah, Rashi says, rather, in this week's parsha, that overnight, you know, when Moshe said to him, "In the morning, we'll take care of this. We'll demonstrate who's who." So overnight, what's Korach doing? He's all night persuading people to join his rebellion. What's Moshe Rabbeinu doing? He's davening for Koach to do tshuva. That's how they each spend their night. So he was really convinced of his rightness and apparently a very persuasive person. Yeah, Meira, please.
Yeah, you said, how can we, Dora's question, how do we know if our motive is sincere? And you said you talked to a rabbi or, you know,
a wise person, even a friend.
So how would a conversation like that go?
A conversation like that would go like this. I would like to run by you the following thoughts or the following ideas that I have, you know.
Yeah.
And what do you think of it?
Yeah.
You know, do you feel like it's yashar? You feel like I'm on the right path? Or are my goals, I would say, where can I use a little fine-tuning? So sometimes you'll get the response, that sounds great, or yashar koach, so good. Other times we'll get a response that, well, you know, a little adjustment, little fine-tuning could be necessary over here. And I think really that this conversation can be had also with a close friend. You know, it doesn't have to be Rabbi Rebbetzin, you know, mentor, teacher. It could be, you know, Rav, could be, for sure. But it can also be a person who you can open up to and someone who you can be honest with and they can point out some things. It's that kind of friendship is... offers that.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Gilly, yeah, please.
Just on that, I often find when I say something out loud to someone, then I hear it.
Right. Just by saying it sometimes, right, you can kind of check yourself.
Yeah.
Very true.
I was thinking that this whole thing can be used against from people when non-from Jews say, well, look, you know, he calls himself an Orthodox Jew and he's breaking the law,
mm-hmm.
whatever, but they're watching to see if we're
it's true.
Taking the Torah in. And
yeah, you know, the Korach probably would have made big headlines, you know, in our times he'd be in all the left-wing newspapers, you know, pointing out the Pesronos of from Jews and Talmidei Chachamim. Right. Sure, we have to be aware, cognizant. Sir, was your hand up? Yeah, please. Yeah, I thought so, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what Korach did. He went around and he campaigned, basically. And it's not to say that he wasn't religious, he just felt he should be in charge.
Right. He had an ego problem of
right,
the large order.
In my mind, that was his bigger problem.
Yeah. But that's it. You see, that is a non-internalization of Torah on a deeper level. Like, if he is not working on his ego or his drive for power or for covet, if he's not working on that, so in that area, which is a very fundamental one, he has not internalized the Torah. It hasn't seeped in deep enough to help him or allow him to deal with those very deep personality issues. And if we're off base on such a deep level, we're going to go off the deep end. At some point, it's going to catch up with us. So here's Korach. He's already reached high levels in the Jewish community there, and it catches up with him. We don't find him mentioned before. So apparently before, it was kind of like below the radar, like you're not noticing it. But at a certain point, it will always catch up. And it will play itself out. It's like you see it sometimes with people who have, let's say, let's just take a problem with drugs or alcohol for a minute. So, you know, for a while they're able to hide it and conceal it, even function as a person in society. There are functioning, you know, addicts and alcoholics in society. I'm talking about the ones who don't have it under control. But eventually, we know it's going to catch up. And when it does, it just blows up in a very, very strong way. There's something fundamental that's lacking. Please.
So when do you know that you're not in
Now, so that's a great question, but he was a leader, right? He was in a family of Kohats who were leaders of the Jewish people. He wanted to be the leader, or the Kohen Gadol, or the Nasi of his thing. Everybody is a leader in their own way, in their own place, in their own time. Makir es makomo. And, you know, it's a difficult struggle because sometimes a person is striving for leadership and that's their place in the world. That's what they need to be doing. Other times there are really not only insincere, but ulterior motives in what they're trying to do. So if you see somebody trying to overthrow the Gadol HaDor, you can assume that there's probably something wrong, right? But it wasn't so obvious, right? A lot of people didn't come forward and say, hey, Korach, you're trying to revolt against Moshe Rabbeinu, who was up in Shemayim for 40 days and 40 nights and came back. You're trying to overthrow him. Like, are you crazy? But a lot of people didn't say that. He got a hold of the people. It's very, very subtle and insidious. Yeah. David, did you have a hand up before? Yeah, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Them. I mean, you're talking, not talking, and really strong.
Yeah.
I think, because I was thinking that too. Except this is before all that, when it was pretty in your face that Moshe's the leader, and yet he was, so that's more of a troublemaker. Not somebody saying, no, this is the time of Shacharis, or whatever their arguments were,
right.
I don't know, with the major people.
Right. That's the machlokas of Shem Shemayim.
Yeah.
You know, Hillel and Shammai argued about very fundamental things, but they were both tzaddikim and they were l'shem Shemayim. Korach was not l'shem Shemayim. His machlokas was l'shem himself. And it's not so easy to tell, right? That's the thing. It's not so easy to tell when you're in the thick of it. Please, sir, yeah.
The rabbis.
Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. You know.
So they're not Russians, obviously.
Yeah, they're all great people. They're great people with some very, you know, fundamental disagreements, but they're all great. As opposed to, let's say, Shabtai Tzvi, right? Mm-hmm. Who was a Talmud Chacham and a Kabbalist to a certain level, but he was corrupt inside. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people couldn't see that. So there's a very big difference between great people, tzaddikim, arguing with each other over Torah, l'shem Shemayim, and they're all great, as opposed to somebody who's coming in really to overthrow the whole system or to take people away from Shmiras HaTorah v'Hamitzvos and those kinds of things. That's what we have to have our eye open for. Yeah. Yeah, Dori, please. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when the Torah is compared to water, and you mentioned oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Shemin's eyes. Yeah, so what are those aspects about Torah that we're supposed to learn from?
Okay, so water, there's two things that are mentioned that we could talk about. One is that water gives life. Everything requires water. So the life, the vitality, the vibrancy of Torah is often compared to water. It's also interestingly compared to fire. You kind of cross over from vital to passionate, right? So life-giving is water, passionate is fire. And then another concept of water is that it's yored mimakom govoa lemakom namuch, that it goes from a high place to a low place. They say in scientific terms, it seeks the lowest level. So water represents humility also, that it comes down. Shemen zayis, which is olive oil, you see this a lot on Hanukkah. That represents Sodos HaTorah, the secrets of Torah, because oil floats on water. So it's higher than water. So the idea of Shemen Zayis and Chochmas HaTorah really refers to a deep level of Torah Shabbal Peh, understanding. Sure. Mm-hmm. Mir, you had one more comment, please? Yeah, please.
I was going to say that I think that this is universal, that if people think, like, it's all about me versus it's about my relationship with Hashem or my relationship with other people. Mm-hmm. The moment people start thinking it's all about me and their viewpoint. That like represents, well, it's all about me. It's like about guiding. Mm-hmm. This is not the way I want things to
right.
be. Where, you know, there's no reason that things have to be the way you want them to be.
Right.
This is Hashem's running the world. You're not running
right.
the world.
That's right.
So I think this is Korach's stumbling point. It was about him. And
yeah.
There's many other people in the Tanakh that we see that they thought it was about them and what they needed to do rather than about what can I do for Klal Yisrael or for the other person or for somebody else. That's,
yeah.
that's like the dividing point.
It is. And that's also that indication of the word Vayikach as well.
That he was a taker.
It's about himself, right?
Yeah. A taker. And we
yeah.
haven't discussed Dasan and Aviram, but they were troublemakers.
Yeah, they were.
All
they were serious troublemakers. This is where they finally saw their end. But yeah, they were throughout the thorns in the side of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm sure also very influential people.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be.
Yeah.
Okay, let's finish up this mimer. Now he says a very fascinating insight from his grandfather. Vishamati me Adoni Mori Varabi Zatzal. That's that abbreviation. We are about 15 lines into it. Very bold, bold words there. Adoni Mori Varabi. So I heard from my grandfather, he says, which means the Chidush Harim. Shalachin Yesh B'Torah Bracha Lefaneho Le'achareha. That there is, when it comes to Torah, and this means when a man gets called up for an Aliyah, you have a bracha before the Torah is read and a bracha after the Torah is read. So what is that comparable to? Kamo b'mazon. That's just like food. Kishuhu ro'ev, when a person is hungry, mavorech al shehiz mina Hashem yisparach halechem. We say a bracha rishona, like shakol ne'abidvaro, amotzi lechem yin oretz, that Hashem has given us food. So thank God, I now have food, I can eat it. That's the bracha rishona. Ukishuhu saveya, but then there's another bracha that you make after you're done eating, when you're full. Yesh birchas hamazon al hasviya. There is a benching that we make over being satisfied. So the Chidush HaRim is saying, just like this comparison of Torah to Lechem exists, we find a halachic similarity when it comes to an Aliyah LaTorah, that Lechem has a bracha before it and after it, and Aliyah has a bracha before it and after it. So what's the second bracha about? That's Sviya, that means to be satisfied. Ma shehalecha mis'akel b'meya, that as the food is digesting within a person's body, umas bio, and you're remaining full. It's giving you sustenance. That's what's happening. As the body is digesting the food, it's assimilating the food. It's taking it into the body so we feel full. So what's the mashal there? That's once again the idea of the Torah being internalized, just like lechem is. V'lochein shi'ur birchas hamazon kol zaman ikul. This is a halachic statement. How long can you bench after you're done eating, right? So the halacha is as long as your body is still digesting the food, which is in general around 72 minutes. So let's say you finish eating at 2:30, you finish your meal, and it's 3 o'clock, 3:15, can I still bench? Yeah, sure. 3:30, yes, because it's within 72 minutes. Now, once you get to 72 minutes, then you have to make an evaluation and say, do I still feel full from that chant, right? From that Shabbos lunch. Most likely you do, right? If you're still full from your lunch, even if it's past 72 minutes, you're allowed to bench, and you have to bench. If it's 72 minutes have passed by and you're not full anymore, you could eat again, then you can no longer bench. So the halacha is that you can bench as long as you're still feeling satisfied from the food. Ukamokein yesh levorech la'achareha al kabolas chiyus umazon mehatorah. So too, the bracha after the Torah is read, that's about the life and the assimilation and absorbing of the Torah into us, Shayihi Yanivla Bidamav, that it becomes absorbed into our very blood and becomes a part of us as people and who we are. Then that last abbreviation there is V'divrei Pi Chacham Chein. That's when you say, when you hold somebody said something really nice. So he said this about his grandfather, the Chidush HaRim. That means the words from the mouth of a wise person have chen. So divrei pi chacham chen. V'zeh ha'yachaser l'korach. And this is what Korach was missing. Now he says it outright. That all that Torah, somehow on a certain level, did not seep in into his being, into his personality. So the same person who is the Talmid Chacham can revolt against Moshe Rabbeinu. That break in intellectual knowledge, but not having affected him as a person. And we see it with his followers too, because the famous story, you probably know it, because it's about a righteous woman, the wife of On Ben Peles. So he's the other one in the rebellion. And he's not mentioned later. What happened? So he went home and told his wife about what's going on, and she said, what are you going to gain from this, right? Right now, Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader. You're not. And if Korach wins, you're not going to be the leader either. So what are you going to gain? So she says, I'll take care of it. So he stays in his tent, and when Korach's followers come to get On Ben Peles, what has his wife done? She has uncovered her hair, and she's standing at the entrance to their house. So when they are about to go in, they see her, and they turn around. Her hair is uncovered. These are very frum people. They're about to revolt against Moshe Rabbeinu, and they're frum people. The lady's got her hair uncovered. They turn around. So she saved her husband because she was smart. And it also reveals this same point about the people who were following Korach. These were frum people, the Talmidei Chachamim. They think they have Yirat Shamayim on their way to trying to overthrow Moshe Rabbeinu. It shows what we are susceptible to as people, the delusions we can have. V'zeh haremez sheyordu chayim sha'ola. So the Chachamim say, it says, of course, really befeirush in the Torah, that they went down alive into Sheol, into Gehenna. So Korach went into Gehenna alive. Shehagam shehoya bo divrei Torah, even though he had divrei Torah, it did not help him. Avalo asu bo roshem. It didn't make an effect on him. Had no impact in him. So he goes down. Now he's saying Moshe emes v'Torah so emes. And as we all know, Bnei Korach, the children of Korach, at the very end, they did tshuva. So they didn't go down into Sheol with him. They did tshuva at the last minute, and they were saved. And that's how Shmuel Hanavi ended up coming from Korach, because Korach's children did tshuva, and then they went on. They had children, and eventually from that lineage came Shmuel Hanavi. And the Chachamim say that was one of the things which threw Korach off, that with his Ruach HaKodesh, he saw Shmuel Hanavi coming out of him in the future. He says, wow, I must be a very great person. Right? Shmuel Hanavi is coming. I must be really in the right here. So he took the message in the wrong way. Once again, Vayikach. And he took that as further arms to mount his rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, the fact that Shmuel Hanavi came from him. So that goes back to the Chose of Lublin's very striking teaching that you even have to be careful with Ruach HaKodesh. So the internalization of Torah, which really is the theme of this idea, you know, it runs across everybody's lives. You know, we see it here with Korach, and the Iker, of course, is to apply it and see, you know, if in some way we can do greater things to allow the Torah to become a part of us, to be honest about who we are, check ourselves out, and try and live our Torah into our lives. Yeah, please. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How it tied into
the taking in Torah. Yes. Yeah, this is what he was saying. So just as it is with food, that when you say the bracha achrona, what are you saying it on? You're saying it on being satisfied, which is to say that it's still affecting you. It's affecting your body. You're feeling full. Once that time passes, then you can't say a bracha achrona anymore because you're not feeling the effects of the food anymore. So the idea there is that what is the bracha achrona about? It's about being affected by what you just ate and being full from what you just ate. So the Chiddush HaRim says that's the same thing with Torah, that the bracha after the aliyah is about being affected by the Torah which we just learned or just read out in Shul. That's the comparison he was making. Yeah, please, Regina. Right?
So you're
never going to really reach. That's right. Tikkun HaMidos is a lifelong process, and the main thing is to be involved in it. It's taken for granted that we're never going to be perfect. That's always a good thing for us to remind ourselves of. But it does not excuse us, it doesn't pater us from the process of Tikkun HaMidos. We always have to be doing it. That's right. The greatest of people. The greatest of people, right, have concerns about what could possibly be a very subtle negia that they're not even aware of. And so with that, we have to be mispalo. Like we have to dive into Hashem to save us from these kind of mistakes. So sometimes we say in our tefillos, please Hashem, open up my eyes. Right? Gal Einai, open up my eyes. One of the things that we're trying to say is, please help me to see something which right now I'm not able to see about myself. I'd like to see it. So we have to ask Hashem for that insight. Okay, have a great day, everybody. Have a wonderful week. We will have one more shiur, Bezras Hashem, next Thursday morning, a week from today. Yeah, we'll have one more. We're going to make up for the one that I missed last week. I'll have one more nugget. It's not on the schedule, but we mentioned that we'll have one more shiur. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, Gail. Thanks for recording. So have we been able to have any of these?